what they're sounding like, and have been eagerly awaiting their return. So here it is. Tickets, directions, and info, sundaystreet.org. The Sunday Street Series is a collaboration of WUSB's Sunday Street Series, the Long Island Museum, and the Greater Port Jefferson Arts Council. That's the Kennedys, live at the Gillespie Room in the Long Island Museum, Route 25A in Stony Brook. See you there.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, there was no good music to be heard around. Then one day I turned on the dial. There I found music to make me smile. I waited for a legal ID. The DJ said WUSB. They start each day with the rising sun. Don't ever finish till after day is done. So if you want good music to hear, there's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. At WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. Couple of minutes to 6 o'clock. If you want to hear the entire edition of Democracy Now, you can go to democracynow.org. Our spring radiothon kicks off this Friday, March the 29th. Actually, I think that's a typo. I think it's Wednesday, March 29th. That would be tomorrow. Yes, the radiothon kicks off tomorrow, and there's also going to be a one-day giving day. Any pledge you make to WUSB during the one-day giving campaign helps keep WUSB operating for another year and shortens our on-air radiothon pledge drive. And, of course, we have some great thank-you gifts for your donation. If you want to request something, you can always email us, wusbdonations@stonybrook.edu. And please stay tuned to 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, WUSB Stony Brook, for all kinds of amazing programming. Please spread the word about Radiothon, as our signal is still depleted. But at the end of this Radiothon, we expect to have a couple of brand new, stronger signals to be proud of. It's currently 6 o'clock. That means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, over here.
And exciting baseball game that we had right before an abbreviated Democracy Now. Stony Brook just kept on scoring runs. Like, it was going out of fashion. Boy, I feel sorry for the baseballs. Just kept hitting them.
Intense.
Yeah, yeah. I thought they had a mercy rule. If you score that many runs, the other team gets to go home.
Like, you can't do that. It's an unsportsmanlike.
You know, I enjoy baseball. I really do. I like its slow pace. Even when it's affecting our show, I like and I don't like what they're doing in Major League Baseball. We're going to find out Thursday.
I heard about this.
Yeah, the season's going to begin on Thursday, and I think that's when everything's going to fall apart because it's all about moving fast now. You gotta pitch within 20 seconds and or 15 seconds in some situations, and you can only try to pick off a couple of times, and replays are going to be harder to look at because of that rule that you have to pitch quicker.
Well, it's grueling. Like, I just wonder, like, the intensity over and over and over. It's a cadence that not every single pitcher has.
Yeah,
it sort of creates this uniformity, uniform or like high pace, and that I don't know if everyone really that's how they play.
I don't understand what the hurry is. You know, when you go to a baseball game, you're there for a while. You know, we used to go to double headers when I was a kid. That's two games, and they would last forever. It's a whole day. Now, yeah, you gotta move quickly, you know, and it's gonna be bad for the announcers too because they have to come up with statistics immediately because the next play is gonna happen. They can't have the back and forth banter that we've all grown accustomed to. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this will improve things. But I just don't think speeding things up is always the answer.
Certainly, and there.
If you could just talk a little faster, that would be helpful.
Situations that could be completely different in how they play out and what kind of strategy is necessary under that kind of intense time limit with people like breathing down your neck and they want you to get off and like move on to the next thing, and it's just like it's the thing that can't stop, and you're just trying to get one thing done, and that impending switch to something else just is weighing and weighing and weighing. And
you couldn't have said that in 5 seconds, Kyle. You know, radio time is valuable, okay? Finn is breathing down our necks, you know? Every week I get a memo.
And, I don't know who, but
I'm just saying, you know, you gotta step up the pace. It's dog eat dog, whatever that means. When has a dog ever eaten a dog? When has that ever happened? Can someone look into that, please? Because that's been bothering me for a long time.
I think they have some kind of truce.
It's a dog-eat-dog world. What does that mean? What, the whole world is filled with dogs eating other dogs?
It's an outmoded
reference. How does that affect me as a human, even if that is going on? You know, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to start eating dogs, too? Or am I supposed to eat other humans? Someone please explain this to me. They say it, and they expect you to understand it, but it doesn't make any sense. How do I look that up? How do I look that up? Hey, Google.
We're going to have to wrap this up for...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
The next story?
I'll sit down.
We don't have
much
time.
Look at this story. I was right. I was right. The New York Times agrees with me. Could this be New York's least snowy winter in recorded history? Recorded history, Kyle.
Didn't feel very snowy.
This is mostly about New York City, but it certainly applies out here on Long Island. New York City's spring-like winter is on track to set a record. The least snowy season on the books. It's likely, though by no means guaranteed, that the city will fall short of the lowest total snowfall accumulation since record keeping began shortly after the Vietnam War. No, shortly after the Korean War. No, shortly after World War II. No, shortly after World War I. Jeez. No, shortly after the Civil War, that's when they started. That's the last one. After the Civil War, that's when they started keeping records of how much snow was falling in New York City. Vietnam War. National Weather Service station at Central Park has so far, it's about to be April, and we're still measuring the snow? All right. I'm an optimist, but I don't think I'm that optimistic.
There could be this last minute cycle that you just don't predict out of nowhere.
Well, I should speak, but because we actually have a video of that 1990 fundraiser. We keep releasing chapters of that. And one of the days, the very first day, which is already out there on Channel 2600 on YouTube, you'll see it's April 5th. Well, no, I think it's April 7th. It's an April day, and there's snow on the ground. It just snowed that night. It didn't last, but it did snow, so it's possible.
And to put it in perspective, there was unusual, extraordinary, immeasurable, darn near immeasurable mm-hmm. amounts of snow in other parts. It was redistributed, so to speak, is I guess what I would just add.
Yeah, California got snow.
It was in a lot of places in quantities that maybe would have been ordinarily distributed elsewhere.
They don't deserve snow because, they complain about drought most of the time. Okay, here's some rain. Oh, now we're going to complain about flooding and landslides and things. What? Make up your mind. Which is it? Do you want water or do you not want water? Nature can only go so far. I'm in a bad mood today. I don't know why. I'm just lashing out at everybody.
I don't want to interrupt.
The National Weather Service station at Central Park, which we have to visit sometime. The National Weather Service has a station. I don't know how to get there. Maybe I can ask Waze to direct me there, but just, walk up to it. It's probably just one of those little wind things and maybe a thermometer and I guess a connection to the outside world so that people can see what it's saying. And I've heard of this all my life, the National Weather Service station, in Central Park right now. How did they know that? Because there's a thing there that measures this. I want to see that thing. My tax dollars pay for it, I think.
It's like some kind of remote station.
What's remote about it? It's in Central Park in the middle of New York City. That's pretty non-remote. So anyway, the National Weather Service station at Central Park has measured 2.3 inches of snowfall for this season. 2.3 inches. Do you know what the average is, Kyle? The average per season?
No, I don't. I don't.
It's 2 feet, 24 inches. So we have 2.3 inches, and the average is around 24. That's how bad it is.
Which means accumulations could be much higher and sometimes lower, but this is...
Never lower. Extreme. Wait, how would they ever lower? This is the lowest. You'd have to go before the Civil War to get lower.
Lower than the average, I meant.
Well, lower than the average, but not lower than this.
It fluctuates.
It's never been as bad as it is right now. I can finally say
this
that.
This is the extreme.
Have some documentation to prove it.
So we're parched.
Yeah. Now, the previous record was set in the winter of 1972-1973. That was 2.8 inches. All right, so you know what? If we get half an inch of snow between now and whenever they stop and give up for the year, then it won't be the lowest since the Civil War. So we only have a few days left for that to happen.
Wait. Is this going to be some kind of thing where we all have to imagine the snow's going to happen?
No, I don't. You know what? I stopped caring.
Think collectively.
I no longer.
Chilly thoughts.
I don't want snow anymore.
I don't want this new age weather conjuring.
I prefer to be able to say this was the worst winter ever, okay? This predates my grandfather's lifetime as the worst winter in New York ever. I don't want a half inch of snow to go and ruin that.
And the bees have written it off. Why should you take this winter seriously? It's over. It's spring. It's happening.
1995-96, we got 75.6 inches of snow.
That's so much.
Yeah, that is so.
In an urban setting.
75.6 compared to 2.3. Yeah, that's...
It makes it so sound so pathetic.
It is pathetic. That's why it sounds like it's pathetic. Anyway, the factors at play in the city's snow drought, it's a snow drought. That's what it is, a snow drought. Call it that, folks. Act like we're in a drought because we are. The factors include La Niña. This is a recurring climate pattern originating in the Pacific Ocean. It tends to be associated with less rain and snow in the coastal mid-Atlantic, unseasonably warm weather, and also there's a random chance because... we did have some storms, but they basically skirted around us you know, or arrived on a day just a little bit too warm for snow to collect on the ground, and we got rain instead. So it's not a drought. It's a snow drought. Snow drought, meaning that we don't get snow, but we get other forms of water. And, of course, there's climate change. The effects of a warming climate on snow are complex, especially given how intensely variable snowfall has always been. A warming climate can increase snowstorm precipitation, and average snowfall has actually gone up in Central Park in recent decades. But it also means that winters are shortening, and climate scientists warn that climate change could make snowfall even more volatile than normal. So I don't know what to expect.
Expect more unusual patterns, maybe more dynamic, like a bunch of snow really quickly, which is kind of, if we got any at all, it was what it was, like little bursts of it that then go away because then the warm air comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sporadic kind of a snow pattern. It's
yeah.
It's hard to take. If, for people that like winter and, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah, well,
relish in that.
Most people don't seem to. Most people are like, you know, this is great. It's just like Florida. You know, Long Island is becoming more like Florida every damn day as far as mentality and now as far as weather. Yeah, it's depressing.
I take issue with that. I think it's a personal preference that, you know, you compliment the sunny weather all the time. It's a stereotype. It's a cliche. And, you know, other weather patterns and cloudy days and foggy days, mm-hmm. all the different conditions that are part of Earth's systems are fascinating. And they're part of life. And adapting to them is what makes everything interesting, keeps you energized and on your toes.
Yeah, and also variety. You know, variety is a good thing to have. That's why I like to have heat waves and blizzards in the same year. You can do that in New York. New York has weather. It's not the same all year long. It's not calm and pleasant. No, it's stormy and angry. That's how I like it.
One major hurricane.
Three nor'easters.
Yeah, Atlantic storms.
This is minimum, by the way.
Okay, sorry. Let me.
A heat wave where a temperature goes over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. All right. Some severe thunderstorms. You know, enough to scare the kids.
Near monsoon.
What am I leaving out? A tornado watch, not a warning. You know, tornadoes are bad. I don't really enjoy them.
Small ones.
Yeah, little mini twisters. Well, tornado watchers like them.
But they do touch down, or there's like mysterious things that happen in parts of Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about it sometimes. It's a little spooky. It's like eerie.
That's just Long Island.
Yeah.
It's definitely a little eerie.
Well, there's coastal conditions, which that becomes more of like maritime flooding or tidal variation, which is a huge part of the surface area of an island.
Right.
So you got to kind of add that in.
Rough seas, of course. I like rough seas. You know, from land, I don't like to be on rough seas. You know, things like just to put you in your place, to realize that nature is so much more of a force than you ever give it credit for, and you damn well better not piss it off because it will have the last laugh. That's all. That's a lot more interesting than sunny and pleasant every damn day of the year. All right, and we have houses. You know, we're inside, so it's not like rainstorms are going to really affect you that much. And they're good for vegetation and all kinds of things outside.
So, yeah, don't assume that everyone wants pleasant
weather. I'm arguing for weather.
No,
for the way things are.
Well, this story is about no snow, mm-hmm. and when ordinarily there would be. So here we are talking about other ordinary weather cycles that we ought not to miss, and that shouldn't just be labeled as, you know, treacherous and have this kind of this thing associated and this idea, this negative connotation,
mm-hmm.
when sunny weather, which is itself can be really dangerous and an awful condition, that can be just as life-threatening, just as as harrowing and uncertain a condition, and it, yet it's always assumed that people want that around, and I'm with you. I'm advocating for weather.
Yeah, you know, I almost feel the same kind of anger that I get in the political disagreements, because, you know, I almost feel like Republicans want this. You know, like, they're in favor of no snow. Everything that I like, they're against. Even things that they have no say over. So, you know, a nice cold winter, no, Republicans want Florida all the time. You know, anything pleasant, it's like, no, Republicans want unpleasant. I know it's not true. I know it's not real. It's a perception that you get when you're constantly butting heads with every little thing. You know, climate change and pollution and planting trees. We shouldn't be arguing about these things. We should be in agreement, but we're not. So it just makes it seem like, okay, I like this. That means Republicans aren't going to like it. You know I have to get past this, but reality is really kind of making that difficult sometimes. It's really, it's a challenge. You know what I mean? It just feels like every little thing is being challenged, even things that we have nothing to do with. Of course, we are affecting the climate. There's no question about that. Of course, there is a debate about that if you talk to certain people. But, you know, weather is something we should all be experiencing and enjoying, our, you know, together.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to necessarily have the association with being an impediment, like being something that is insurmountable.
Mm-hmm. We have to talk about Nashville, obviously. Been sort of pushing it back. I hate this. I hate having to talk about mass shootings. I really do. This is not a fun part of this in any way. It just makes me feel worse every time, because every time I just feel more and more helpless, you know, and I feel like we all don't care, you know. We've accepted this as a part of life, and we really don't care. And to demonstrate that point, you know, I want to give you some words from this guy, Representative Tim Burchett. He's a Republican from Tennessee. Basically, and this is a quote, said this: "We're not going to fix it. We're not going to fix it." He has already concluded that they're not going to do a damn thing about these mass shootings. He said, this was today, there's no way to fix gun violence. Even after a shooter killed 3 children, 3 adults at an elementary school in his home state. And this happened yesterday. "It's a horrible, horrible situation," he told reporters, "and we're not going to fix it. Criminals are going to be criminals." Yeah, here we go. "My daddy fought in the Second World War, fought in the Pacific, fought the Japanese, and he told me, 'Buddy, if somebody wants to take you out and doesn't mind losing their life, there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do about it.'" He also said he doesn't see any real role for Congress to play for reducing gun violence other than to mess things up. "I don't think you're going to stop the gun violence. I think you got to change people's hearts." Well, there are levels of naivety there that you would need to be a mountain climber to get over. But let me just start by saying that if Congress is determined to not screw it up, how about Congress just step back and let the people take care of this? Because you guys are the ones holding it up. Most people don't want AR-15s out there. Most people want some kind of sane registration, background checks, things like that, you know? Most people are responsible. I do believe that. You know, if you watch the news every day, you would never believe that, but most people are responsible. Most people want the same things. But when you whip them into a frenzy, you know, recently, this was only last week, who wasn't in Congress who was saying that there are thousands of IRS agents who have been hired, armed IRS agents, that are going to come to your house if you don't carry the one on your division or on your tax return. They're going to come to your house, guns drawn, and Biden is making this happen. Those kinds of super exaggerations, outright lies, I think, what does that do to people's mentality? It makes them go defensive, makes them think, oh, I've got to arm myself because the IRS is coming to my house and I got to protect my family. And you just keep making that argument over and over again. You just keep making it seem like we're under attack. If it's not the IRS, then it's the immigrants. If it's not the immigrants, then it's the transgender people. And God knows what other enemy of the week it's going to be. But you got to arm yourself. Otherwise, they're going to win and you're going to die. That mentality from Congress, from elected officials, that is what is building this. So, you know, if you're going to say we have no role in Congress, then shut the hell up. Stop talking about it. Let common sense prevail. Let people figure this out because you're not doing any good whatsoever. And it just pisses me off no end to see innocent kids mowed down by somebody who bought guns legally. I bought guns legally. In Tennessee, you can do that. You can just carry guns around. And it's encouraged. You know, if somebody 2 days ago had said, yeah, this person shouldn't have a gun. They've been acting erratically. They've got some mental issues. You know that the proponents would say, oh, they have every right to carry a gun. You can't stop them. So you're basically saying this is okay. You're basically voting for this. Because if you don't stop it before it happens, the only thing you can do is clean up after it happens. And that is what we do time and time again. Yeah, I'm hearing all kinds of praise for the police, and they deserve it. They did a great job, you know, after it was already too late. Because with these kinds of weapons, it doesn't matter. You could be, you know, the force from Star Wars. You won't be able to stop it because it happens so quickly. Because these are weapons that are meant to mow down hundreds of people in a very short amount of time. And, yeah, you'll stop them in the end, but only after it's too late. And if you don't get these weapons out of our hands, out of the hands of people who have absolutely no business owning something like that. If you don't get those guns away, you're basically setting it up for the next time. There will be a next time. There will be many, many next times. And, you know, I almost didn't want to talk about this at all tonight because I've gotten so cynical and resigned. Because I keep hearing the same people saying the same things, and I'm almost feeling hostility towards them. You know, people say, it's the guns, we have to stop this, when are we going to start doing something? And I'm like, yeah, you keep saying that, and nothing changes. It's not their fault, because I'm saying the same thing. We have to get angrier, we have to get louder. You know, we have to start taking over offices and making headlines, and forcing these people who are blocking common sense into doing something. Because the majority is not with them. I guarantee you that. If the majority were with them, we would be doomed. So, yeah, the suspect had bought 7 guns before the school attack. 7 guns.
The police, I think, had some idea of their mental or some home or domestic situation. So I don't know everything. And, of course, anybody's in the same boat. There's so much that everyone in the public is left with reeling and asking every question. And the video of the police and lauding that, yeah, it looks like a sprint, you know, the body cam is just like, how fast can you go in there and where's the stopwatch and so on. I mean, that kind of challenge is not the kind of thing that people should have to be ready to be doing in at a moment's notice everywhere.
No, you're absolutely right about that. This is not something we should be expecting our kids to live through.
It's like a track meet, you know, yeah.
You and I, you know, we went to school in different decades.
Totally.
In different parts of the country, but we never experienced anything like this.
No.
I can count on one hand the number of times I saw cops on school grounds in all of the schools that I attended, in every single grade from 1 to 12, on one hand. I you know, maybe a bomb threat, maybe some kid who freaked out and got violent or something like that, and it was a really, you know, a situation people talked about for years afterwards, that kind of a thing.
Or chaperones for, like, an event, like a dance or something, you know.
What, cops? Why would cops be at a dance?
Or, I don't know, the public, you know, coming for some kind of an event where they need security. And
no, we didn't need cops. We never needed cops.
Well, the types of situations where people have security now, I mean, it's basically like the beginning
of
the school
day. You get the home economics teacher to do double duty and stand by a door or something. It was, no.
Well, it's progressed to that now, and now they want it every single day.
You used the wrong word. You mean to say regressed, because this is not progress of any sort. Look, I'm telling you how it is in other parts of the world. I'm telling you how it's been here. Kids should not see cops in their school. Kids should not see anyone armed in their school. Kids should not be going through metal detectors. And if you're saying that's normal, that's what I have a problem with, because you're accepting a normal that is not acceptable, and it's mentally damaging. Because, you know, kids going through an entire career in school with that, you know, when they get out, they're going to assume that's the world. And it just, it really upsets me to see all these people demanding more of this, you know, demanding more cops in schools, more metal detectors, as if that solves the problem. It doesn't. Do you think it makes a kid feel secure, you know, to be searched every time they walk through a door? They're going to expect that it's a dangerous place, that there's weapons around.
How do you learn? How's that conducive to education?
Yeah, and you know, it's relatively easy, and I'm not giving pointers or anything like that or advocating this, but it's easy to get past those security checkpoints in a school. There are doors everywhere, there are windows everywhere. Give me a break. You can hide weapons. This is a pathetic way of dealing with the problem. The problem, again, it's the guns. It's the prevalence of guns. It's the people who are getting more guns to counter the guns that are out there. And I think, you know, even though I'm miles away from agreeing with people who are into guns, I think we can all agree that there are too damn many of them and that we'd be in a lot better shape if there were fewer of them. Can we at least agree to that? You know? And if we can, then, all right, now what's the next step? And I think a great next step would be to just stop with the AR-15s, period. I got it right. I'm ignorant on types of guns. I admit it. I'm not interested in learning every little detail about guns. There's other things in my brain I'd like to devote attention to and instead. But I do know AR-15s are the weapon of choice for mass shooters. They're extremely dangerous and deadly. And I don't know of any animal that you would hunt with an AR-15 on this planet. All right. So my suggestion, my strong suggestion, is that we get rid of those, period. We criminalize that. Nothing in the Constitution implies in any way anything like an AR-15. And we've already done this insofar as not being allowed to own cannons and tanks and machine guns, et cetera, et cetera. So once we all agree, I know it's never going to happen, we're all going to agree, but once we actually have the political will to do this, you know, we have a period of time where you turn those in, you get compensated handsomely for it. Maybe you donate it to Ukrainians who really need weapons right now. And after that, after a sufficient period of time has passed, you pay some significant penalties if you have one. Period.
I think that's one way it could go, but I honestly want to see more responsibility from the manufacturers. And they've made so much money off this, and I just feel like something like a manufacturer recall or something is necessary for a particular model like that.
Oh, I like that. It's manufacturer. Yeah, we found that these items can hurt people. Yeah, so if you press a trigger, it could actually hurt somebody.
I'm
so
serious.
Please send them back. Well, I think that's the only way you're going to get them.
I'm
to
not
do
joking.
That.
I mean, the thing you're saying is so right, but the common refrain when you talk to people, try to talk about certain or specific weapons, you know, reclaiming them or paying people for them, and you know, buybacks or collections and so forth. People are like, oh, you'll never get all of them. You know, there's this that baked-in cynicism.
If you get 90% of them, that is significant. Look, there's a reason why.
But it's also putting it on the individuals, and it's not necessarily all their fault. I mean, they're branded and advertised to, and, you know, confronting that, I mean, that should be one part of it, but I think also coming from the source in a responsible way with some kind of message could go a very, very long way.
Yeah.
The people that ordinarily wouldn't participate in something that feels like it's attacking their individual right.
I'm all for attacking this from all different angles. But there's a reason why these things tend to happen in places where it's easier to get the weapons in the first place. It's not impossible to get them in other places. Absolutely not. But it happens more in the places where it's easiest. That tells you that the easier you make it, the more instances you're going to have. You know, and it's really... It's not that hard an equation, you know? So get rid of a significant amount of them, you will see those numbers go down. You've seen, this has already happened in other countries, all right? It's happened in Australia. It's happened in the UK, in Japan, in Canada. There are so many places where it's happened, and we need to start taking this seriously because, you know, these are kids. They don't deserve this. Nobody deserves this, but it's particularly tragic to see that happen. And... We can't allow the story to become eclipsed by lunacy and conspiracy theories where people say it's all a false flag or this is, you know, part of some Antifa operation or ridiculous things like that. Listen, for people listening here in the area, I want you to contact our local congressman. Yeah, his name is Nick LaLota. He was just elected against my better judgment. But let's see if maybe he'll do something or maybe not stand in the way. He has two offices. He has an office in Huntington, 478A Park Avenue, phone number 631-289-1097. Also has an office in Rocky Point, in the Rocky Point VFW post, 6249. Do those numbers really mean anything? I mean... 6249.
They're unique to each post. I
believe. But you need to know that number to go there. It's a VFW post, Veterans of Foreign War, which is a strange thing to say.
Well, when you go to different posts, you can refer to your posts. I don't know if maybe the number then comes into play. Maybe there's multiple posts in a certain city.
My point is, you're not going to get confused and go to 6250. Which is right down the block or something like that.
Your name's Ned?
It's a VFW post.
There's
in Rocky
two
Point.
Neds at the same.
And, you know, probably you know where it is already, but it's at 109 King Road in Rocky Point. I'm sure you can meet with all kinds of veterans and trade stories and things like that. 631-289-1097. Hey, that's the same phone number. That phone number can't ring in both places, can it? Indeed, it's a cell phone. And if you're in Washington, D.C., or you want to take a trip down there, he's at 1530 Longworth House Office Building. There should be a room number there, but I don't see one. Area code 202-225-3826. Nick LaLota is our congressman. Hopefully he does a better job than Lee Zeldin did. You know, it's I don't like saying that people want mass shootings, but if you don't do something to prevent them, you are voting for them. And that's, you know... Lee Zeldin wanted Long Island to become more like Tennessee in that regard, where it would be a whole lot easier to get weapons. And somehow that is the answer to violence, is more weapons. You know, an analogy I drew up a couple of days ago. Imagine a society where hard drugs were just everywhere. And you collected hard drugs, like, you know, it was candy. And you made sure that everybody had access to hard drugs. And then you started asking yourself, why is everybody dying from hard drugs? What am I missing? What's going on here? What do I do? What would you tell them?
Maybe get some spaces where there aren't so many hard drugs everywhere.
Yeah, maybe it's the drugs. Maybe don't do that. It's not hard.
I will say the thing that you've discussed before at great length, the idea in the Second Amendment of a well-regulated militia, is an argument that I've heard more and more of. People are understanding that in like a really, I don't know, commonly understood way. Like never, like in years past, I just never heard people talking about it. And, you know, they talk about things like the National Guard system or, you know, other formal groups that play a role and are there for, if not that, what else? But in stark contrast to political organizations with a sort of militant appeal,
that's distinct. It's been so distorted, the interpretation of the Second Amendment. It does not mean what these people are saying it means. And before Reagan, you know, that is how it was interpreted. And ever since then, it's been twisted and distorted and used for opportunistic reasons, you know, for gun manufacturers and people who just are into weaponry and militarization of everything. And that is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind at all. It was about protecting yourself from invading forces. These are things nobody would debate. They sure as hell did not mean for us to be slaughtering each other with massive weapons they couldn't even conceive of.
And I bet you some of those guys down at the VFW would tell you a thing or two about
being
organized.
Let's not assume people take a particular stance. There are people who have been to war who know a thing or two about weaponry, about death, about what a bullet can do. Maybe we listen to them. Maybe they are the ones advising policy.
Oh, that's the other thing about that gun that you talked about. It's the kind of ammunition is much more powerful than a normal rifle and stuff. And, you know, those are all arguments that I'm hearing more about. I mean, people understand what is at stake here, what's going on. And, I mean, what does this person have? Seven? They bought seven guns at five different places.
Legally.
Recently in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And Tennessee is, like, really gung-ho. I mean, this is like something they put in campaign ads, like how many guns they are, you know, proudly showing.
Their congressman had a holiday card where their entire family was sitting around the Christmas tree with all kinds, I don't know, what were they, AR-15s, all kinds of weapons. I don't mean just little guns, big guns. Kids, how is this something that kids should be around in any regard? You know, we protect our kids in so many ways. Sometimes we go overboard, but not this, you know. And then that's the state where it happens. I'm not surprised. I am not surprised because if you promote that constantly, that is what's going to happen. It's not not difficult to figure out. All right, we've said enough about it. Didn't even want to talk about it in the first place. Sure as hell didn't want it to happen. Kyle, you've got something cool there. You got what? Democracy vouchers or something?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this.
We could use a few of those.
So in some cities, there's this thing called a democracy voucher, and I actually have four of them here.
These sanctuary cities? Is this Antifa?
Oh, wow. You're going to go there? I mean,
somebody,
all right.
Somebody has to be that voice.
Right back in the envelope.
No. I'm going to see. So, okay, we should point out, Kyle's from Washington State. And he's able to vote by mail no matter where he is in the world. It's an amazing system. It's a secure system. It works.
And other worlds.
What do you mean, other worlds?
I mean, it's presumed in other universes, too.
I don't know about that, but on this world, yes.
So it is a way that residents of certain cities can donate to candidates. Instead of them having their own money, they have a certain allotment. In this case, $100, and you get four vouchers of 25, and you can basically write on them. You just
that's some pretty sturdy paper there.
Yeah, it's the same stuff. The ballots, similar.
Uh huh. Uh huh. It means business.
And then you just fold it.
Careful. Oh, that's some good perforation there.
Yeah.
We have these paper towels that they don't perforate along the perforated line. I don't know what the point of them is. You rip them and they rip in the middle.
No matter how you pull it.
It's ridiculous.
But this rips nicely. It has no cash value. It is not transferable.
Wait, you just said it's $25.
No, it does, but it's only for participating candidates, which they give you a URL, which you can look up. Here, let me give you this.
Okay.
You can hold that.
Is this legal for me to hold it?
Well, you can hold it. It hasn't been filled out.
Okay.
I'm not writing it out to you. I'm showing it to
so
you.
So candidate name is blank.
Blank.
I can
exactly.
write Daffy Duck on there? Or?
You're not.
All right.
Please don't.
No, I won't.
So I have a certain time frame that I can use it, and I can... devote all of them or several of them to a single candidate. I should use them soon. I know that was something that in the stuff I was reading, you should do a little bit sooner or throughout. Otherwise, candidates reach their limit, I believe.
They reach their limit?
I keep saying candidate.
You mean they have too much money?
They can only have accounted for a certain amount per time period or spending limit. Yeah.
Wow.
In any event, this is just in this case for a city council race.
Okay, so you have this voucher here.
I've never heard of this.
I've never heard of it either, but you have this voucher here.
But it's a way to get...
And you fill it out, you enter your candidate's name, you send it in, and they get $25 credited to them?
Yeah, you get an envelope. Yep, they get $25, and then they can spend it.
Let me see that envelope again. That's postage paid?
Yeah.
Okay. So everything is paid for. Wait. Yeah. Okay, so wait. They get $25. Where does that $25 come from?
Well, I don't know exactly who
gives it. I didn't see you fork over any cash here.
No. No, it is... It's a way for people to donate and...
Donate what? Where's the money coming from?
It comes from some kind of pool, I guess, of other money.
Wow.
That is... allotted in the election.
So basically, you've just been sent $100 that you can now decide who of up to four people can get that $100, and it didn't cost you $100. It's part of a pool that's pre-existing, and you're basically allocating funds to candidates.
Yeah, and if you don't use them, they carry over to the next cycle, apparently.
Wow, so you don't lose them if you don't use them.
Yeah, and you just find out about more candidates. Yeah, it's just...
You can send all four to the same candidate?
Potentially, yeah, yeah. But you have a limited... they can only have a limited number of them in some cases.
So if everybody sent one to the same person, they couldn't accept all of them.
That's why
they're maxed out.
You have to send them in. So I have to look at...
Can you imagine that being maxed out on political donations where you just can't get any more? That's...
And it does print your name and some other details. It's an interesting system. I'm curious if other places have started doing something like this.
So they know who donated. I guess they know now who donated, I guess, if you make a donation. So it's not like voting.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, and the very last detail, it says the contribution is public information. This means your name and possibly your address will be posted with the amount on the internet.
Okay. All right. Well, at least they let you know that. This is something. This is really interesting. Now, the website to get a list of participating candidates. www.seattle.gov/democracyvoucher. One word. That's pretty cool.
Neat campaign.
Democracy vouchers.
So I assume this was probably in a previous proposition of sorts that took a percentage and funded it somehow from, I don't know, some tax.
Well, I want to see how that works out. I want to see if that's something that spreads to other places. It sounds like a nifty idea. And,
well, if for general elections or maybe party primaries or something, if the party allocated a certain amount and then voters were only contributing at the individual level from a certain pool to kind of put a cap on the whole amount that is spent, it would be kind of cool, and there would be accountability and built in, I think. So.
Hey, moving on, we have some new rules now for Grand Central Madison. Kyle, I think you should pay attention to this because, you know,
was I breaking
sometime,
the previous?
Well, maybe we inspire some of these. Skateboarding, sitting on a bench for too long, traveling with your emotional support dog, are all forbidden now under the LIRR's proposed rules of conduct. Okay, they're proposed, so they're not necessarily in effect yet. And this is for Grand Central Madison. I don't wonder if it's for Grand Central Station or just Grand Central Madison. It's a 13-page proposal. Wow. And it'll be voted on by the MTA board tomorrow. And this answers my question. It mirrors the rules already in place at Grand Central Terminal. Seeks to ensure proper use of the agency's space, the protection of the public while using the space, and compliance with applicable legal requirements. So that means you could have had your emotional support dog downstairs at Grand Central Madison, but you couldn't go to Madison's Grand Central Station upstairs. You wouldn't be able to get to the street. And conversely, if you were on the street, you wouldn't be able to get to Grand Central Madison to bring your emotional support dog. Why are they picking on emotional support dogs?
What if it's an emotional support dog on a skateboard on a bench?
Look, I get why skateboards might be a pain in Grand Central Madison. All right, fine. What if you're, you know, what if you're bringing your skateboard on a train? I mean, you can carry it. But, boy, those hallways look perfect to ride a skateboard in. So is this really priority, you know?
Well, I think they're concerned that someone could be injured.
Well, don't ride down the escalator. That's a massive escalator. Boy, what a ride that would be.
That would be really, it's super steep.
It really
I would
is.
Not want to.
The speed you could achieve on that.
That.
Oh,
that's
boy.
So dangerous.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. What
oh,
else could
God.
You do?
I'm getting like, I just felt my stomach.
Well, there's a
flutter. Oh my God.
There's
gosh.
A space between the escalators, right?
I'm getting vertigo.
You could run down that, you know?
No.
That'd be something.
Room
spin. But you know, people are going to do all kinds of weird things.
And it'll start getting all marred up, and there's all that glass. What if something breaks? Like, skateboard goes flying through some handrail?
Anyway, violators of the rules can face multiple penalties, including being ejected from the station. You know how long it takes to get ejected from that station? You're 17 floors down. You have to go all the way up before you can get kicked out onto the street. And, wow. And if you go in again, it's going to take a long time to track you down. You could also get a fine. You could even get jail time under the public authorities law. Ironically, initialed PAL. Many of the rules appear to target loitering in the station, including by homeless people. One edict dictates that the maximum amount of time in any calendar day that a person may use benches, chairs, or other furniture designed for sitting is, how long, Kyle? Maximum amount of time in a day.
I'm going to say 3 hours.
90 minutes.
90
Boy,
minutes?
Boy, you literally better move your ass. Because, it's an hour and a half. That's all you get.
I was comfortable there.
Let me point out to you, if you come three times, no, that's 30 minutes per sitting. It adds up. They have a piece of chalk, and they mark you with it. And if you show up more than once,
your shoe, like,
yeah, they know what they're doing. Station officials, though, can extend that time in instances of significant delay or other exigent circumstances. Under the category of hygiene, listen up, the rules would bar using drinking fountains or sinks to wash clothes. Really? I can't use a drinking fountain to wash to wash a pair of pants or
what if it's delicates? Like just like a light load.
This
like
seems
just
to be a blanket banning. That's what it seems to be. And yes, it does include blankets. So no, you can't use drinking fountains or sinks to wash your clothes.
Well, I didn't look at any of the facilities, but there are pretty expansive, I mean, well-identified restrooms.
That's
I didn't
true.
Use them. We didn't explore any of that.
There's no drinking fountains in restrooms. I'm not sure why that is, but there aren't. I've
but
never seen that.
They could be spacious and really, really nice, and people might be feeling right at home.
Apparently you can use a toilet to wash your clothes, because I don't see that barred. Just drinking fountains and sinks. Oh, and this is another no-no here. You may not share a toilet booth with another person. So in case you're thinking of doing that in Grand Central Madison, think again. That is not allowed. How did they even track you down Who was walking around checking the number of feet under a stall?
See, that could be, like, something about, like, drug use or, you know.
Yeah, or their hanky-panky that goes on.
Yeah.
Now, the exceptions, if you're caring for a small child or a person with a disability, then you can do that. But the rules ban most animals from stations, including therapy or comfort animals, or animals used for emotional support. I would hope not guide dogs, because that would be cruel. It's not a lie, a guide dog, as you're going down 17 flights of, you know, into Grand Central Madison. That, yeah. So, yeah, new rules, folks, new rules.
I heard that the timetables have been shifting around a whole bunch, and a lot of people are still upset about the whole shift in their own routine and their own commute. Hopefully it's improved so much that the physical change in that as a hub will be the last thing people think of. And
Well, they have to figure it out, and they will figure it out. But you know, attacks on conductors have gone way up. This is not the way to deal with inconvenience, folks. I mean, I know most people know better than that, but everybody's going through this together, figuring it out. You know, they have to fix Jamaica, make it a better transfer or no transfer at all.
Penn Station, where they're gonna put Madison Square Garden, and they're gonna surround it in glass.
I don't know what they're gonna
make
do.
Make a giant arcade.
Look, we're all on this hell ride together. That's the important thing. But hey, we're out of time now. I do want to invite folks to write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. I want to invite you to listen to Finn coming up right after us at 7 o'clock. I also want to invite you to give generously on Giving Day. Is that what it's called tomorrow?
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
I almost said Giving Tuesday, but it'll be Giving Wednesday.
This kicks off the massive spring radiothon here at WSB. So be a part of it. It's a huge kickoff. It's doubled. Every donation is doubled. It's matched benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Get in on the action.
More details will be broadcast over the air. We will be back next week at 6 o'clock. Let's go out with some happy Ukrainian music. What do you think?
I'm with that.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Чується все, так що побачу їх, от іменно за то я.